Shalom, good morning. This is Radio Shalom coming to you through Planet FM 104.6. Shalom, Lenny.
Shalom, Ruth.
Well, welcome back to Lenny Blocksberg, and we're going to continue with the fascinating stories that he comes up with. Lenny, I wanted to know, you said as a dyslexic it took you a long time to read a book, and later on you said you just have to flip through and you know what was in the book.
Right.
What magic, what trick?
This is part of what frustrates me so much about the way that dyslexia and autism are dealt with. There are two really fundamental concepts about understanding things like dyslexia and autism. And those are two that really affect me quite a bit. ADD as well, for that matter. Very similar. So first thing is that everybody who breathes has a score on the autism spectrum. Everybody who breathes has a score on the attention deficit disorder spectrum. Everyone who breathes has a score on the dyslexia spectrum, okay? If you're alive, you have a score. So the fact that you have a score is not a problem. It doesn't make you different or better or worse. Where that score is indicates what you might have difficulty with, but it also indicates what you might have as advantages. And herein lies the key problem. Dyslexia, autism, ADD are not handicaps. They are different brain wirings, different brain functionings. And our society that we live in is set up for people to operate as if you do not have dyslexia. You do not, or you're very low scoring dyslexia, you're very low scoring autistic, you're very low scoring for ADD. So that's the way the world is set up. And so you wind up having awkward problems. The higher you're scoring, the more difficulty you're having getting by. And I have arguments with clinicians sometimes with, there's a range here where at a certain point you're considered to have a disorder, okay? To me, there's actually a range below which you have no problem, no issue here, okay? Above which you have a serious issue. In between, you have a fuzzy zone where there are people who, the language that I've tried to propose is people who are high scoring normal and high functioning clinical. Notice I changed the language on the two different sides. So it's high scoring normal and high functioning clinical. So high scoring normal person with autism or dyslexia is able to function in society without clinical support. They might get a couple of counseling sessions, learn some coping strategies, and then they can function on their own. They don't need to go to a doctor. They don't need to take medication on a regular basis. And they function in society, but their score might be very, very high. It could be even slightly above the clinical cutoff. Then you have these people who are high-functioning clinical. These are people who need some clinical support. They need regular visits with somebody for some help. They might need pharmacological support. They need something to help them out. But with that little bit of support, they can get by in society, and they can function okay. Mm-hmm. Outside of this, there are people who need serious support, and there are people who don't need any consideration for support on the two extremes. But I like to view the in-between range like that. Now, that's one side of it. The other side of it is that it's not a handicap. It's a different brain function. So dyslexia doesn't mean that you're stupid. It's not a handicap that says you can't think or can't do. What it means is that your brain tries to take in everything at once. So when you look at a page of text, and you try to focus on one word, the text swims, and you can't see it. But when you look at a situation, you see the world, and you take it all in, and you see everything at once, and it's all there, and it's all real. People who are quote-unquote normal, they need to go and look at things one at a time and check them out, and they don't notice everything around them. But a person with dyslexia takes it all in at once. Now, what that means is that if you're really focused and your eyesight is really sharp, you can actually fan through a book and you take in everything at once. Okay?
You can read that quickly.
Be Yes, because you take in everything at once. And you don't always know why you know all the things you just saw, but you've taken it all in, and then you have to, your brain has to sort it out. So it troubles me that we don't teach people how to use the benefits of dyslexia. We only teach them how to cope with the situations where you have a disadvantage. And what I see in people who are being treated for dyslexia is they're constantly depressed, feeling inferior, being told that they are a problem that must be dealt with, and everyone, and they're dependent on everyone else's care. Actually, dyslexics are magic. They're people who have special abilities, things that nobody else can do. In some areas. So if you go into a boardroom, for instance, everybody's sitting around the boardroom, there'll be some people who are very good at focusing on the details of what needs to happen. And there are some people who will take the whole picture in and be able to see connections and the interactions. People with dyslexia will be very good at that. That's their skill. If you want, I mean, the Secret Service in the UK has started hiring people high-scoring dyslexia because they've realized that these people can take in and see connections that no one else can see. The same thing with autism. People who are autistic tend to be very focused. So at... in a teaching situation, I had a young man who was very seriously dyslexic, and I was teaching the children how to do crafts with rubbish. And he started working on his craft, and he was doing a very sloppy job because nothing he does matters because he's a handicapped kid, and he doesn't count. And I basically told him, no, that's not good enough. And he was shocked. He's not used to people saying that to him. He's used to saying everything he does is okay because he's handicapped. They just pat him on the head and treat him like an idiot. I said, no, you can do better than that. And so I showed him, and I told him what he needed to do, and he needed to be much more meticulous about it. People who are autistic tend to be extremely good at very meticulous tasks. And when I told him that that's what I wanted from him, he swallowed and focused and basically produced an absolutely beautiful little Star of David out of the scrap metal from the tin cans. And later on, I called him back and I showed him. I said, here are the stars from the other children, and here is your star. Notice how much better your star is than theirs, how much neater and straighter and cleaner and tidier. I said, don't let anyone ever tell you that you're not as good as anybody else. In some things, you're better, and you need to learn to use your advantages and your strengths. And it was the first time anyone had ever talked to him like that, you know? And it frustrates me no end that we don't identify people with autism as people who have unique and different abilities. Yes, autism creates challenges dealing with the way our normal society is set up. And the more severely you're affected, the more challenges you have, and you may need some help getting by with that, okay? But there are also special abilities that you gain and things that you can do that are different. To put it in a different context, we have some blind musicians in our band, and to some extent, their ear is so much better. They can identify the tone and the chords by ear so much better than a sighted person who depends upon those other assets. And so that's a case where the person develops a skill because they had a challenge in what everyone else depends on, okay? Autism and dyslexia, it's not a matter of developing a skill. There are innate skills that are inherent to those conditions. And I feel very strongly that in order to get the best out of our society, we need to find out how to get the best out of everybody.
You feel that there's not attention given to that, say, in the education system?
There's a huge tension. They're treated as handicapped problems. They're not... I mean, to some extent, I had an advantage in that there was no name for dyslexia, and I didn't know that I was handicapped. I just knew that it was hard for me to do things that other people found easy, and so I just got on with it and found ways around it. And, you know, the fact that I couldn't speak at times if things didn't go certain ways, and I didn't know what to do about it. And I would find a strategy to deal with that panic inside of me. It's more of a an autistic panic than I'm getting angry. Although simple-minded people around me think I'm getting angry when I do that, but it's actually not. There's no anger involved. There's nothing to be upset about. It's just there's a panic inside, and I can't control myself. And you know, it's very 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 strange. But I mean, I had to just deal with ways of finding ways to deal with that. And nobody told me that I was handicapped because nobody knew there was a word for it yet. Whereas today, these kids grow up being told they're handicapped. A flip side of that, which I'll give you a different side. If you ever study, when I did my MBA, we studied high-performing teams. Now, in the literature, it says that a high-performing team is a team where the performance of the group is better than the performance of the best individual in the group, or the sum of the group's performance, okay? It then says that's a theory, and it actually never happens. And most of the textbooks will tell you that actually, really, a high-performing team is a team where they perform at the level of the best. Okay? And so we were given these little exercises, and we did this about a half a dozen times throughout the MBA in different classes with different lecturers and different exercises. And they would give us an exercise and put us in random groups. We didn't get to choose who was in our group.
We sat here in New Zealand.
Yes, here at AUT. And every time they asked us for the best scores of the individuals and the best scores of the group, my group always scored, the group scored better than the best individuals in the group, every time. And every time the lecturer would stutter and start saying, they would be going through saying how that never happens, and they would find out that it happened with me, yet again. It wasn't a fluke of one time. It was 100% every time I do it.
But only the group you were in?
Only the group I was in would do it, okay? And the lecturer would be saying how that's impossible, it never happens, and, oh, well, occasionally it might happen for, yeah. But I did it every time, and the reason I do it every time is because I look to people to try to find what is the unique advantage that each person brings to the group. Actually, Joan, you're not a very fast runner.
Amazing.
Yeah. So if I put you on a team to do something, you would not be able to keep up with the team if we were all going to do something quickly together. However, you have some other skills. Okay? You might be the best person to be sorting out what we're trying to move at the other end so it gets put away properly. And we might get the task done faster, not because I got you to run faster, but because I found out that you actually have unique skills that you can do better than some of the others that you add to the group. And it's kind of like Einstein's thing about teaching a fish to climb a tree. Okay? The famous, you know that famous quote.
Tell me.
If you try to teach a fish to climb a tree, you'll forever be spending your time telling the fish he's stupid. Okay? And it's really about, it had a lot to do with his frustration growing up where teachers were trying to get him to do things that he wasn't good at, but not identifying his unique strengths. Mm-hmm. Einstein obviously had some great unique strengths. Mm-hmm. But actually, everybody does. You know, I taught this to my daughter, and she found the handicapped, brain-damaged child on the street. And she went and found that girl's unique advantages. And they became best friends because my daughter was the only person who actually sought out and wanted to find what were her strengths rather than trying to accommodate her as yet another problem. And this is the way we need to treat everyone. It's not just dyslexic. It's not people with things that we call handicaps. But everybody has unique advantages. And for dyslexia and autism, which I feel very acutely, people with dyslexia and autism have very strong, unique advantages, which our society can benefit from greatly.
I think that is recognized.
They
have skills that are unique.
In the last 10 years, it's beginning to be recognized in academia, in the practice, in schools. It's never actually, where we actually deal with children on the front lines, it is never actually discussed. They're always dealt with as handicapped. They regularly use the term handicapped. They don't use alternative ability. They don't use challenges and strengths and challenges. They don't use that language. And these kids, every child I speak to who is affected, reacts as if they're depressed and dealing with being told that they are a problem and they are dependent on everyone's goodwill and support to be able to get by, rather than being told that, rather than having people look for what is special and unique and good about each of them, what do they have to contribute to society, to the world, to themselves, to us? Everybody has something. Donald Trump has something to contribute. Seriously. I mean, look at the reaction you have. Immediately you think, but he's a buffoon, he's an idiot. Well, actually, I don't like most of what Donald Trump does. I think a lot of what he's done, he's taken things the wrong way around. But the reality is he has things to contribute too. And
he gives comedians good.
Lately, that seems to be his best skill. But, I mean, seriously, if I don't know Donald Trump well enough to go into exactly what what he brings to society that's positive. But everybody brings something, even people you don't like. Okay?
I find that sometimes when you think of dictators in the world, you don't think of the good things that they may be.
Well, I got an award for teaching in a special group I was in. And in California, there was a group of young people, and I was asked to help teach them science. And they were children who had just come out of prison for having served time for violent crime. Rape, murder, stuff like that. These are not your average kids, okay? And they wanted me to introduce them to the possibility of science as a new career. So I approached these kids as if they all have something of value, as if they're good people who have made a terrible mistake. Let's move on. What have you got to give? And they loved me. It was the most amazing. They'd never seen anybody approach them as somebody who had something to give. And so I wound up getting an award because several of the kids were so positively affected by that, just treating them as if they were human beings that might have something to offer.
How long did it take you?
Oh, it was just a few weeks program. It was not a big deal. But it's just simply because, I mean, I went in and I treated them like I walked in and as a teacher, I treated them like friends. And we were going to do some fun
things
together.
They didn't try and take advantage of you?
Yeah, they might have. And with my background, I basically didn't let them get very far. I mean, remember, I grew up a bit rough too. Okay? So I didn't kill anybody. But, you know, I dealt with people who did. Okay? So, you know.
So where did you pick up all these skills, Lenny?
The School of Hard Knocks. I mean, seriously. As I said, I wound up getting started early and going through a lot of stuff and just School of Hard Knocks. And a lot of support from my grandparents and my dad. I mean, I remember when I would have an autistic panic and I was shaking uncontrollably and couldn't control what I said or did. And my grandfather got me a bakery knot. So in those days when you went to the New York bakeries, you would get your biscuits or your rolls or something. Rugelach, that was a good one. Oh, yeah. A box of Rugelach. But it comes in a little paper box, and it's got this very, very fine cotton string wrapped around it and tied into this impossible knot that no one can ever untie. They I don't know how they put these things together, but they're completely impossible to untie. And they would, basically, you'd get the Rugelach home, and you'd be in such a hurry to want to get to them because they smell gorgeous. You know what Rugelach are like. Mm-hmm. And you just pull the string off around the sides and rumple it into a ball and throw it away. So my grandfather would hand me a knot. He said, "You untie that, then we'll talk." So I sat down, and I untied bakery knots.
I know that that's what women did for their sons intended, to find out if they had patience. They gave them not.
Well, to some extent, the fly fishing that I've done, and the stone cutting that I do for the jewelry making and stuff, a lot of it is very similar. That simple pleasure of that calming effect of doing something that takes my focus and just draws it in a way that it calms me down.
You lose yourself in it.
Yes. And the bakery knots, I mean, I used to refer to it as, I used to refer to the shaking as the monster. And when the monster got a hold of me, and there was nothing I could do about it, but the bakery knots helped. So that's why if you're dyslexic and you take in everything at once, you see so much more of what's going on around you, you observe so much more. So a normal situation where other people might not notice things, I see things happening. And it makes a better story because I saw a lot of the details. And
you passed your skills on.
Pass them on? I try to pass them on. My daughter learns some of them. I've learned how to communicate some of them to her. The autism gives you great skills for being able to focus and do things well. So, you know, my stone cutting is something I do well partly because of my autism.
And you choose... You choose your pursuits, do you? So the things that make you feel good, you choose what pursuits you do, like stone cutting or something else.
I try things, and if I enjoy them, to some extent, it's very much by empirical evidence. You don't necessarily have to go out and plan these things that much in advance. But
you do, and then you say, I like or I don't like.
Yeah, you can. It's perfectly fine to do that, too. That's not a problem. So the autism and the dyslexia do give you advantages. They make they make me better at certain things, even though they give me difficulties at other things.
So when did you find this out and be able to manage deciding that it's nothing to get upset about, it's something that you use? Because you must have seen that you were a bit different from the others.
I've always been different. Mm-hmm. I've never felt wanted or accepted anywhere. I suppose that's part of the complex of having been abandoned when I was a baby and then having it been reinforced by having her come back and tell me that she wanted me to meet her real family now. But, you know, reinforced by a few other things over the years as well. You know, being told that too bad I'd never lived past high school graduation because I just don't belong here. I've been thrown out of shops because we don't serve your kind around here. You know, I mean, you could say it was from having been abandoned, but it's certainly been reinforced by a few things over the years. I don't exactly fit anywhere. I don't feel like I do anyway.
No, we do.
Well,
we feel you fit.
I feel very grateful that people let me in.
I don't think it's a case of letting in. I think it's a case of sharing.
Maybe so. But I think for me, I was doing when I finished the coursework for my PhD and I was lecturing at the University of California, and it was a big class, big genetics class, undergraduate genetics class, and there were several lecturers in the class and a lead professor who was managing, a senior professor who was managing all the lecturers. And
all the lecturers had what professional qualifications?
Oh, we all had our PhD.
You all had your PhD?
Yes. Okay.
In
genetics.
Right.
So we're all PhD, genetics PhDs. But there was a senior faculty who was long since tenured, et cetera, who was managing the class. So he called me into his office one day, and he had been reading my notes in the margins of the students' papers. And he said that a research article had just come out in one of the top journals about this new concept called dyslexia, where you basically see things in all roundabout ways. And they gave some examples in the book in the research that where they had found these people who mixed up words and wrote in different directions and things, and some of it was really extreme. And he told me that he thought that it was so extreme, he didn't think there was anybody in the world that could possibly exist like that until he saw my writing. And I was so much worse than anything that was in that paper that he wanted to know how I function. And that was when I realized that there was now a term for it, because it had just been published, and that I was almost a textbook definition example I was more extreme, much more extreme than the most extreme case in the publication, the original publication for it, okay? So that was where I learned about dyslexia. And then I suppose over the last couple of decades, I've been learning more about autism and Asperger's and reading about it and starting to recognize that it's a legitimate thing. Having some experience with some friends with autistic kids and watching and observing and starting to recognize a lot of that. And it's, I've never gone to be diagnosed. I'm still terrified of going actually to a psychologist because of all those years where I was doing volunteer work. And when I would have to go in to talk to colleagues as a small child about getting support for working with my father or for other work that I did over the years, always having them try to diagnose me and treat me, and realizing that basically it's made me have a great deal of distrust for the profession.
You tried to keep them at arm's length?
Well, I've learned to have to keep them at arm's length. But, you know, now that I know that there's things being done that might actually have benefited me, I still haven't gone back for a formal clinical diagnosis on any of it. But it, I mean,
is that distrust or?
A lot of it is distrust, and a lot of it is just can't be bothered anymore. I mean, I studied enough papers in psychology in university and graduate school, and I've read enough of the literature and done enough practice in volunteer work and stuff with my dad over the years that I don't think it would add very much at this point to go to a doctor and say, yep, you're right.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you going to do?
Lenny, you've studied in so many different areas, and you've got so many different... What made you choose the different degrees that you've taken and the different professions that you've followed? And which was the first?
All right. So, okay. I started writing some of this down for myself for a little bit. I guess when I was two, there were two things that I wanted most of all. I wanted to save the world.
At two?
At two, yep. I knew that because...
You knew the world needed saving?
I grew up in a family of social activists, okay? And I wanted to make a difference, okay? And I wanted to be an archaeologist. I like dinosaurs and archaeology because I'm a two-year-old, okay? Well, that was good. I kind of realized that as wanting to save the world, I was good at technical stuff, and so I thought I'd wanted to be a scientist. And archaeology seemed like the thing that was most interesting to me at that time, so that's where I started. At about 6 years old, I moved into chemistry, started buying university chemistry textbooks and reading chemistry textbooks and understanding chemistry. This is why when I was first learning to cook when I was 5 years old, and my brothers and sisters brought me a candy wrapper, I basically knew all the chemical equivalents because I'd been reading university textbooks on chemistry at that point. At this point, there's not a lot of time left today. You wanted to know about dyslexia and autism.
So we spent most of the time on that, but luckily we're going to continue.
Well, there's one more thing I'd like to come back to on that. We might do that a different day. And because of my experience with psychology and working with psychiatric treatment, I've got a rather unique historic view on where the profession has come, which maybe we'll start out with that next time before I go into my other professional things. Okay,
thank you very much, Lenny, and thank you for coming, and thank you for listening. Don't forget to listen next Sunday at 10 past 10 to Radio Shalom, and if you've missed this program, you can go to www.planetaudio.org.nz/Radio Shalom, and it's on 104.6 FM. And we would like to thank our sponsor, Nature Bee.